Now, from the left coast to the D.C. Beltway, covering the topics you love to hate and hate to miss, it's the Silk or Joe Show.
Good morning, everybody. Silk or Joe Show co-host... Oh, good afternoon, everybody. Silk or Joe Show co-host Joe here with you all today. Feeling dejected and rejected because I just got another email from a guest saying, sorry, can't do the show today. Don't know how many that would make, like 7, 8, 9, whatever. That's okay. We do have one guest at the tail end of the show. That's the important part. And the Al and Nathan show got all the guests in for this week, so that the important things were handled. Anyway, folks, we do want to thank the Main Street Radio Network for allowing this program to exist, though they don't actually provide guests themselves. And you can find out more about them at mainstreetradionetwork.com. You can find out all sorts of stuff about the Silk or Joe Show, about the Al and Nathan Show, and podcasts for both programs and an app for Android users so you can stream us on your phone, all there at mainstreetradionetwork.com. Sorry, Apple users, but the thing of it is, when it comes to making these apps, it's not like you can make one and then just transfer it to another type of phone. You have to build it specifically for an operating system. It's basically like I programmed one app in English, and in order to get it over to an Apple product, I would have to program it in German and have a German computer set it up, which Apple being German. So that's the simple way to explain different programming languages to everybody, though it's probably more akin to programming it in English and then having to transfer it into Chinese, but it translated into Chinese. So that is the nature of it. So, oh well. Sorry, I just got another email from somebody asking something I already said. Anyway, so yes, and it would cost me $1,000 just to even get a machine to do that for the Apple product with, because, you know, you need an Apple computer. You can't just translate something on a computer on a different operating system. It's a big mess. It's a big technical mess. So that's why, for you Apple users out there with your iPhones, you won't be listening to this anytime soon unless it's off our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com. And why not? It's the same streaming page. We use the page for both programs, both the app and the website, so you can use it too on the website. And that stream comes to you courtesy of the Salem Radio Network, so we want to give a big shout out and a big thank you to them for it, because they also handle other ways this program is distributed, whether it gets on CRN Talk, whatever radio station you might be hearing the Al and Nathan show on. All that comes courtesy of the Salem Radio Network, so we appreciate that. However, the podcasts themselves are just taken directly from our servers, so we will not thank them for that, because we do that ourselves. Anyway, we also have alannathan.com as another website. Great resource as well, especially since I host the Al and Nathan show several times a week. alannathan.com, you'll find out about the late Al and Nathan there. So we are on social media, too. Facebook at Main Street Radio Network and X at Main Street Radio. All right, now that I've procrastinated long enough trying to stretch my topics here, trying to stretch the time here a little bit, you know, just start talking about stuff that bothered me this week. Get kind of local here. Start the show off strong with a local thing, because it kind of annoyed me. So my local news station, they had some severely sympathetic coverage to some politician with legislation for capping rent increases at 3%. Now, for those of you who rent, you know, it might sound like a good thing, but this is only one side of the story. The other side is the average cost for owning a home increased 4.7% last year. So if you're renting out your home to somebody, for example, then you cannot raise the rent by the same amount that your own costs have increased. So eventually, you know, that gap is going to get bigger and bigger and bigger to the point where you can't rent the property anymore. And I'm assuming that the same thing would transfer over to apartments and things like that, where the costs of maintaining them will exceed the cost you're allowed to increase rent by. And that leads to slums. That leads to slum lords. And the left hates those as well, so what's their solution? Well, New York City, the solution is we'll just have the city spend all this money to buy it out. But the trouble is, the city is its own slumlord, and there is no accountability there. At least if you have a privately owned slum, you can call the police, the city can step in and do something, perhaps, or the city can put pressure on him. But But only really if it's a slumlord who is just neglectful, as opposed to unable to afford things because the prices got so bad. Oh, looks like we do have a guest coming up this next segment. That's terrific. Anyway, so I have to tell our producer about that. I'm getting all these messages here. But anyway, the slumlords in New York City, you know, they can be accountable to somebody. What's New York City accountable to? Who are they accountable to? Nobody. And it shows, because they have a backlog of maintenance requests, and it's all done on the city dime. So you have to tax people who aren't even part of your slum system in order to pay for it. It's just really a bad model, inefficient, and all could be prevented by just allowing landlords to, at the very least, keep up with the cost of maintenance, keep the rent rising tantamount to the increase in maintenance costs. But no one's doing that, because that'd be terrible. And the local story that they presented on the news around me, they were saying, they presented the side of the renters. So what happens if, you have a family that goes out on the street or whatever because they can't afford the increase in rent? Well, okay, what happens when you have to do it anyway because the building gets condemned because you could not increase, the landlord could not increase the rent, therefore they could not pay to keep the building up to code, right? And what happens when the city takes over and the city refuses to do anything because the city will never have enough money for the slums that it maintains. They're too busy shifting the money into their own pockets to bother with you. So this is sort of a statewide thing, though. It's not just citywide. It's a statewide bit of legislation that was being proposed that would do this to landlords. And it's like, I'm not on the side of landlords or anything, mind you. I know landlords can be pretty aggressive with their rent increases and pretty neglectful themselves. I had a landlord for several years who allowed a termite problem to fester in his property. It just seemed so remote and detached that he didn't care that termites had colonized his house part of a group renting. So I know landlords can be pretty lousy, but this law here would affect landlords who are good. This law here would effectively turn over the years the state into the landlord, or the city into the landlord, the locality into the landlord, or BlackRock into the landlord. And that's one thing, too. I got to wonder, this person who proposed this, this politician who proposed this legislation, exactly how much money do they have invested in these groups like BlackRock who buy up all these properties? You know, once the local politicians make it impossible for a private landlord to own anything, these big groups with deep pockets come in and buy up the property. And boy, the Democrats love that when that happens, because these big groups are on their side. And, you know, it hasn't happened exactly yet, but it's legally possible that groups like BlackRock could discriminate against political opponents. You know, whether it's setting up rules for the rental establishment, what they can do is they can set up discriminatory rules for the rental establishment that would automatically force conservatives out. Whether it's you're not allowed to own firearms on the property, you're not allowed to have certain flags on display, you're not allowed to say certain things on the property that might be inflammatory to the neighbors. All of that would at least bury the idea of being a conservative on the property, because, you know, your neighbors could be flying pride flags and transing their kids, but if you even give a glance the wrong way, oh, you're too aggressive to live here, you gotta move out. Landlord says so. BlackRock landlord that the leftists run. So that's what they can do with these property takeovers, or they can just simply profit heavily by it and fund their political machines with it. But either way, not a very good outcome. It makes you question whether or not politicians with these laws about capping rent increases well below the line needed in order to keep up with the cost of maintaining the property, you know, whether or not they have some sort of extra financial motivation going on for them, some sort of incentive to force landlords out. It could also just be pure stupidity or, you know, pure corruption. There might not be this, we'll force them out and allow only Democrats in. And also non-citizens, because we've seen this in cities across the country where, well, first of all, this mass migration under the Biden administration has led to a 30% increase in housing costs nationwide. So we know that, that something's happening there. But second of all, I've talked about it on either this show or the Al Nathan show before, that when the state or local governments are backing the loans that illegal immigrants use to rent, to buy housing, or to backing their the rents for these illegal immigrants, well, the government's backing it. These private landlords, or these non-government landlords, can charge whatever the heck they want to. So, and the government will pay it, because they don't have to worry about the average renter, the average American tenant, being unable to afford it. The government has very deep pockets. So yes, it's more profitable to a landlord to cut a deal with the government to house illegals and other immigrants in their homes and rental properties, thus leading to an increase in rental costs. So everyone profits except you, the American citizen, whether it's capping rent increases or landlords partnering with the government because those increases have been capped.
More bold flavors headed to Circle K as the convenience chain expands its partnership with one of America's most recognizable celebrity chefs, Guy Fieri. Circle K and celebrity chef Guy Fieri are expanding their successful partnership, bringing an exclusive lineup of Flavortown-inspired menu items to nearly 450 Circle K locations across Arizona and Nevada this month. The menu features four crave-worthy creations available only at Circle K, including the mac and cheese burger, sweet heat fried chicken and waffle sandwich, chicken royale sandwich with Swiss and jalapeno, and the hearty all-American inspired breakfast burrito. The expansion builds on last year's successful launch in 10 northern states, giving even more customers a chance to enjoy Guy Fieri's signature bold, off-the-hook flavors for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, all without leaving the convenience store. For the nearest participating Circle K location and the latest deals, visit the Circle K app or website.
This could be another year of extreme weather. Hi, I'm Dr. Jen Quammen, president of the American Veterinary Medical Association. Whether it's severe heat, storms, or forest fire smoke, it's important for pet owners to plan ahead. Here are some extreme weather tips. Check the forecast for severe weather in your area. On hot days, walk your dog early morning or at night and keep the air conditioning on at home with access to plenty of fresh water. Avoid intense outdoor activities when there's extreme heat or poor air quality. Never, ever leave your pet unattended in a car. Temperatures can rise within just a few minutes. Plan ahead with an evacuation plan and pet emergency kit, including several days' food, medicine, first aid kit, and toys. Have your pet's medical records on hand and be sure that they are properly identified and microchipped. Contact your veterinarian if you have questions. There's much more valuable pet information available at avma.org. That's avma.org.
Hey, what's up, everybody? I'm Jason Derulo. I love that music connects to people all over the country. But unfortunately, so does something else. Childhood hunger. 15 million kids struggle with hunger right here in America. And yet, every year, billions of pounds of surplus food in the U.S. go to waste instead of going to the children in need. Feeding America is working to change this. The Feeding America nationwide network of food banks rescues this surplus of food to help provide meals to families in virtually every community in the United States, including yours. But they just can't do this alone. Join me in the fight against hunger in America. For more information on what you can do to get involved, visit feedingamerica.org. That's feedingamerica.org. Together we can solve hunger. Together, we're feeding America. A message from Feeding America and the Ad Council.
The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is clear. Accessibility. Veterans who have served and sacrificed the best of themselves deserve access to the best our country has to offer. Access to meaningful employment. Access to the veterans' benefits they've earned. Accessible homes and vehicles. And access to every part of their communities. With PVA staff working inside VA hospitals, no other veterans organization has provided more real-time, ongoing support for paralyzed veterans and their families. PVA is proud to serve veterans across all branches, all generations, and all conflicts. Our nation's heroes fought for your independence. Join PVA in fighting for theirs at pva.org.
Welcome back to the Silk Road Joe Show, everybody. Co-host Joe with you all today. And, you know, I just realized something interesting about our current guest, aside from the fact that I appreciate his availability at the last minute here. But Monday marks the 10th anniversary since his first appearance on the Al and Nathan Show, and he has, in that time, not been on this program until now. We're now joined by Jeff Carriere, political analyst, columnist with Town Hall, author of America's Last Chance, and host of the award-winning Ringside Politics. Jeff Carriere, welcome to the show. How are you today?
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Yep, glad to have you. So the Democrats, they keep talking about this impeachment idea of theirs that once we get into office, we'll win the midterms and first thing we'll do is impeach Trump because that worked out for us the last time. It seems to me, though, that that doesn't hold as much weight as it used to, particularly after seeing the results of the primaries where impeachment stars like Dan Goldman and Alex Vindman were knocked out. What's your take?
You know, that's true. They've had not that much success. I mean, they impeached him twice, couldn't get him convicted. And you need a two-thirds vote in the Senate, really, to convict. Impeach just requires, you know, majority in the House. I do know that they are united by Trump derangement syndrome. I mean, they all seem to have that hatred of Trump. They might disagree on certain things such as defunding police or opening up the borders or getting rid of prisons, but they do seem to have that in common. So that's why I'm thinking that if they do get a majority in the House, that they're going to they're not going to be able to resist. They're going to go for it. And, you know, because in their view, he's the most corrupt president ever. I mean, they keep saying it.
Right. They kind of back themselves rhetorically into a corner. And I think, at least in the short term, impeachment would be a boost for them, because I remember the first one, or maybe it was the second one that they did, that I remember people online, leftists online, talking about how, oh, Trump has been impeached. That means he's no longer president. Everything he's doing now is illegal, because they just simply didn't understand the process. But that was a very brief boost of popularity, sort of a sugar high for the party.
Yeah, I mean, their problems don't go away just by impeaching Trump. I mean, they still got... Well, the Democrats' real problem is that, you know, they've got this big faction that now just wants everything radicalized and socialism. And, you know, they've got this Angie Nixon in Florida, and they've got El Sayed in Michigan. We're talking about big states. And it's not just confined to just some districts in New York and New York City. So this has really gone national, and the Democrats just have a massive problem. So once they impeach Trump, I mean, that's not going to be enough. I mean, they're not going to be able to, you know, ride that to victory in 2028. So I don't know how they're going to get about solving this problem that they've got now, the split between these two factions, because the energy, the base, the enthusiasm seems to be the DSA. But they realize that doesn't bring in enough independents and moderates, and the coalition's not broad enough for that kind of a candidate to win in a general election. So they're in a heap of trouble.
Yeah, it seems almost like impeachment is just like a go-to reflex for them for any problem they have with popularity. Like sort of, you know, when you
right.
call tech support, the first thing they tell you is, did you turn the device on and off?
You know, that's a good point. I mean, it is something that you know, they can forget about everything else for a little while and just, you know, Trump is bad and Trump is evil and focus on that. But in the column I recently wrote about this, I just don't believe that is what the American people want. I mean, they want these problems solved. I mean, they want to deal with these economic pressures that they're under. How does Trump impeachment in any way solve any of the problems that the American people are having? It really doesn't.
No, it's this sort of rigid orthodoxy they had that this idea worked before, it'll work again. And perhaps that also explains partly the rise of these socialist candidates, because they represent fresh ideas to the party, even if they are radical. At least it's not more of the same. That hasn't worked.
And another way to look at it is also a lot of these candidates are getting elected. These DSA candidates are younger. And, you know, the Chuck Schumers of the world, the people that have been there forever, the institutional Democrats I think there's a lot of anger toward them because they haven't delivered. They haven't been radical enough. They've been there so long, soaking up all these resources, getting rich. You know, your Nancy Pelosi's of the world getting fabulously wealthy as she's there for year after year after year. So, you know, the younger generation tends to be more liberal, tends to be more progressive, more naive, don't understand socialism is a failed system, and gravitate toward that. And that's what I'm seeing in some of these districts across the country.
And a lot of it, too, is a lack of enthusiasm by the average Democrat voter. The socialists, they really seem to turn out in big numbers in these primaries, but the average Democrat voter just kind of stays out. We saw that kind of in the New York City mayor's race where, you know, as much as Ma'am Donnie won all those votes, there were like some 800,000 who just didn't bother coming to the polls at all.
That's true, because look who the alternative was to Ma'am Donnie. You know, a corrupt has been Democrat, Andrew Cuomo. I mean, he didn't inspire any enthusiasm at all. I mean, he had been run out of the governor's office in New York, and that's who they had as the alternative, Cuomo. So, yeah, the regular traditional Democrats have a problem because they don't have exciting candidates that are firing up the base. The DSA has the younger candidates that are maybe good communicators and good on podcasts, but of course the ideas that they have are so broken and just ineffective. And you know, we can just point to any of these socialist countries around the world. They just don't work. They just don't work.
No, and when it comes time to implement them in the U.S., suddenly they find all sorts of hurdles to even get them off the drawing board is the word I'm looking for. With Ma'am Donnie, for example, he has all these ideas about, but they require state cooperation. They require certain things to go his way that just aren't going his way, and they require authorities and powers that he does not have.
Right, so we can blame the state, blame the federal government, blame all these other people for, you know, his problems. I mean, his ideas are unrealistic. They're not practical. The money doesn't work. I mean, you can't come to a point where you can adequately finance all of this growth in government. So, I mean, it's going to be the blame game, right? I mean, they kept me from all this. What I found interesting is that, you know, he hadn't been in office that long, but he's had a lot of setbacks, and you would think the public approval would be plummeting, but I saw a poll where the guy still had approval over 65%. So, I don't know. I mean, I think the honeymoon's going to end eventually with him.
Right. Well, on the one hand, it works out for him, but on the other hand, over in Seattle with their socialist mayor, I was reading just last night that there's now a recall initiative against her, so at least somewhere the socialists might be intelligent.
Right, and that's another failure, right, exactly. And I think hopefully the people there are waking up. I mean, it's never easy to do a recall, but I mean, at least the fact that one's been launched, that says something, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it speaks to frustration, especially if it's somewhere so radically leftist as Seattle, which painted itself as the refuge for all the trans people to move to in the country and has seen huge influxes right. To the point where the city is almost run out of money to support these organizations. The fact people so far left are doing recall is at least, you know, heartening. But Jeff Carrier, appreciate you being on the show. About 20 seconds left. Where can listeners find more of your work?
I'd love for them to go to my website, which is my last name, Crouere, CROUERE.net. They can check out some good stuff right there. And thanks for having me.
Yep, glad to have you. And listeners, we have more Silk or Joe Show after this break.
If you're one of the millions of Americans traveling with pets, it's a great idea to plan ahead. Hi, I'm Dr. Michael Bailey, past president of the American Veterinary Medical Association. Before you take off on vacation, think about a visit to your veterinarian to make sure your pet is current on all vaccinations and medications. Here are some tips for smoother travel. Pack all your pet's needs, including extra water, medication, pet carrier, toys, and first aid kit. On road trips, offer your pet water, exercise, and bathroom breaks, and never, ever leave your pet alone in a parked car. In dog-friendly hotels, be considerate of other guests. Keep your dog on a leash. If flying with your pet, contact your airline about their pet travel policies before you arrive at the airport. Check with your veterinarian, make sure your pet is fit for travel, and think about boarding if there's a chance they might not be comfortable. There's more valuable pet information at avma.org.
This report is sponsored by IBM. A new study from the IBM Institute for Business Value reveals a growing disconnect between executive perceptions of AI progress and employee experience. Executives report AI-driven role change at twice the rate employees experience it. 81% say AI skills are rewarded, yet 43% of employees lack employer AI training, and 50% say AI obscures contributions. Aparna Nair, IBM's Chief Talent, Leadership, and Culture Officer.
The organizations that will lead in this era won't just be the ones with the best AI. They'll be the ones that invest equally in their workforce, making it clear when to trust or challenge the system, strengthening how managers coach decisions, and rewarding employees for using AI responsibly, not just using it quickly.
The study finds that organizations most likely to stand out, redesign workflows, enable managers to coach effectively, clarify decision-making, and align incentives alongside AI adoption. These organizations could see up to 73% higher revenue growth and an 11% operating margin advantage over their peers. To learn more, visit ibm.com/IBV.
Essential tremor and Parkinson's disease are progressive movement disorders that can interfere with daily activities, and symptoms can significantly impact quality of life. To share more, here is movement disorder specialist and behavioral neurologist, Dr. Philip Tipton.
I'm working with Boston Scientific to raise awareness of deep brain stimulation, or DBS, as a treatment option for essential tremor and Parkinson's disease. DBS works by sending mild electrical signals to a targeted portion of the brain through a small implanted device called a stimulator. These signals can help improve movement symptoms associated with Parkinson's disease and essential tremor. Boston Scientific's Versice Genus Deep Brain Stimulation System is an FDA-approved treatment option for Parkinson's disease and essential tremor. Talk to your doctor about the risks and benefits of deep brain stimulation and if it's the right option for you.
Learn more about Boston Scientific DBS therapy by visiting dbsandme.com. This message is brought to you by Boston Scientific.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
What are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
Well, what are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. Don't you remember me? Don't you know that we miss you?
Miss me? Who misses me?
You know, all your friends in the forest. The trees, the pond, that little fort that you made out of branches. We all miss you.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
The forest is not that far away. Have an adventure today. I'm sure your mom would take you.
You're right. I should get out. I want to have fun. Play in puddles, catch frogs, and climb trees. Hey, Mom!
Yeah, hon?
Steven! What is that in your hand?
It's my sense of adventure, Mom. It's telling me we need to get out of the house and have some fun in nature today.
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Joe Show, everybody. Co-host Joe with you all today. Just ranting, raving about stuff I saw on the TV like I'm an old man. This is a congresswoman who she served before and was voted out of office after like one, maybe two terms, and then now she's campaigning again. The primary was a joke. The Democrat prime, this is a Democrat, by the way, in case you didn't guess. The primary here, though, was a joke. She's the only one who ran any commercials, and the ones she did run were directed against the Republican opponent. Like, she knew she was going to win this primary, and the other ones were just, no one competed. There was no competition. There was no primary. Basically, it was just like, the illusion of democracy. It's like Soviet style stuff where you have the fake candidate that you know you're going to get shot if you vote for, so you don't vote for them, and then you have the real candidate. I'm surprised that there even were any other candidates on the ballot to begin with. That's how terrible this race was conducted. You know, it was like Hillary Clinton's coronation back 10 years ago in 2016, where you just have a bunch of people that you know, well, aside from Bernie Sanders, I should say a bunch of people that the Democrat establishment thinks has absolutely no chance against the star that they want. That's what we saw play out here, again, to the point where instead of campaigning for the primary, this candidate was already campaigning for the general election, already had commercials out for the general election before, weeks before the primary even took place. But, you know, one of these commercials that she has out there, well, that's right, I was going through her history still. This person was just left-winger, whatever you expect, and now thinks that they have a chance. Probably does, because you know, there might be voter fraud going on in Virginia. I've talked about it at length before. Actually, I talked about it earlier this week on the Alan Nathan Show, how easy it is to fraudulently vote in Virginia and how the safeguards rely entirely on people who want to assassinate President Trump to conduct a fair election. Like, really? That's what you're going to hinge your safeguards for a free and fair election on, whether or not the people who want your president dead won't cheat in an election. Come on. But anyway, this commercial that this person has out, it has some airheaded teens with her gabbing about how terrible life is, and one of them is saying that they don't even have control of their bodies. And this will tie into the guest that we have in the next segment. For the vast majority of abortions, it simply comes down to having control of your body, exercising a little self-control there. And guess what? Abortions are illegal in Virginia. They're talking like they're not legal or in Virginia, but they are. They have been. And I think the baby, too, might have a thought or two about control over your body, especially when you get to the point that leftists like these airheads in the commercial in Elaine Luria want, where, and what Massachusetts has, where you have abortion up until birth. Which then begs the question, at what point do you consider the child born? Congressman Rick Santormi had a famous exchange back in the late 90s with a Democrat congresswoman about this, she was in support of abortion up to birth, and he's asking, well, what qualifies as birth? Is it when the full baby is out? What if the baby still has a toe in? Is it still alive? What if it has its whole foot in there? Is it still considered alive? What if its leg is still in? Is it considered alive? At what point is the baby considered born? And this congresswoman refused to answer that question. So how many of these abortion providers are going to answer that question as well? Women comes to term right there in the delivery room. Oh, nope, I decided on an abortion. What happens? What happens at that point? The baby can survive on their own. The woman's going to deliver the baby regardless. Really, and Democrats, you know, they say, oh, safe, legal, and rare. That's what they campaigned on. In fact, a lot of Democrats out there outright said, oh, Republicans are being overly, they're being crazy when they say we want abortion up until the point of birth. You know, I've seen it. Nobody wants abortion up to the point of birth. Republicans just hate women and are making excuses. But then what happens? 10 states now have abortion up to birth, and California has a technicality which allows doctors to not actually talk about what they do for up to a couple of weeks after the infant is born. So really, California has effectively allowed abortion even after the baby is out, otherwise known as infanticide to any civilized person. But then again, so are most of the abortions performed considered infanticide to any civilized person. But nope, it's a woman's choice. She didn't, for most of these, again, most of these, she didn't fail to make the choice to have control of her body earlier, so she decided that I will take out my rage at not exercising better judgment earlier by using abortion as contraceptive and killing a child. That's effectively what it boils down to for most. What are we supposed to believe that the millions of abortions conducted, tens of millions, they were all rapes that just hadn't been reported to the police? They're all cases of incest that weren't reported to police? That many women are have medical complications that would prevent them from delivering? No. Well, this whole game was given away, really. Anytime Republicans propose, hey, well, we'll put the cap at abortion for any time, any reason at the first trimester. After that, then it has to be a sound medical reason, or it has to be because of rape or incest. Anytime Republicans propose that, Democrats talk about it like it's a full-on ban on abortion. And the only time the Democrats are ever complimentary on abortion legislation is stuff like this, where it's up until birth, or perhaps beyond birth. So it gives away the game as to what they think. 1.1 to 1.3 million abortions in the U.S. per year. Are we supposed to believe that that's a million rapes per year? Well, that seems to be a bit overkill, doesn't it? Yes, the Democrats do have their statistic that 1 in 4 women experience sexual assault, but the thing is, that statistic was absolutely flippin' bogus. It was just a talking point. It was based on spurious questions and vague answers and very, very, very loose interpretations of what a sexual assault might be, and to the point where if you had sex with someone and regretted it later on, it was consensual at the time, but you retroactively decided, well, I don't like it, therefore it's rape now, that was considered sexual assault. So really, they were almost encouraged to lie about it. And the thing is, I'm talking all this stuff about how women want freedom for their bodies and stuff. These very same women are out there trying to support Sharia in the United States. You think you're going to have choice over your bodies after that? You know, I've actually seen pictures of armed women supporting Sharia in Dearborn, Michigan. Earlier this week, they had this rally. The Michigan sheriffs demanded that people not attend it, because it was Christians rallying against the Islamic takeover of Dearborn, Michigan, and the local authorities said, well, this is going to be racist, no one should attend, we oppose this happening. And sure enough, though, people showed up anyway. But leftists showed up, women leftists showed up, with guns to support Sharia. And boy, I looked at some of the equipment they had, $600 to $700 per woman, almost, it seems. And so who's paying for that? Are they spending that out of their own money to support Sharia, willing to kill to support Sharia? Well, you think your body, your choice now. Guess what? Not when you have Sharia around. But that's what they want. And boy, look at all the rapes that they support, too, these women who think my body, my choice. Look at the rapists that they support. Again, I've routinely lately brought up the example of that one woman who was on camera talking about how, yes, a man raped me, but I don't believe he should be punished for it by going to jail, because that would not help him. But, suicidal empathy right there, because guess what? That man's just going to be raping someone else. But second of all, you know, we have in England right now, they just did it this week, how they issued pamphlets to all these newly incoming immigrants saying, please don't rape us. Please don't rape our children. It's not a cultural norm here to do these things. Yet women want to import all these people, not just to the UK, but to the United States. And then when it came out that, sure enough, these people are raping, they have rape gangs that the government has been protecting, what was the reaction of women? To try and deny that any of this was happening. To call you a bigot for daring to criticize these immigrants. So when it comes to my body, my choice, it really seems like it's just a big joke. A big leftist joke. And it only applies to abortion and killing infants. Sacrificing your little baby to Baal or Molech or whatever it is. Because again, most abortions are not for rape, medical reasons, whatever. Most of them are because, well, my body, my choice, and I made the choice, and I'm proud of it. And they also say that no woman enjoys having an abortion. Yeah, I call BS on that one. You just go to social media and see all them bragging about it. Gee whiz, there's this phenomenon where a woman will deliberately get pregnant, stay pregnant for a couple of months because something about the hormones and chemicals and stuff and body chemistry enlarges the breasts. Then they'll get an abortion once they have larger breasts and then take a bunch of beauty shots of themselves for social media. That's an actual thing. And yet we are told that this is should be celebrated? This is their right to waste life in such a manner? Toxic femininity right there, toxic feminism. the same kind that's inviting. Maybe it'll counter out, though. The pendulum will swing the other way once all these Sharia-loving rapists that the women invite in and call you a bigot for criticizing, once they have their way. You know, that pendulum will swing the other way and women will finally get that Handmaid's Tale society that they are so keen on comparing current America to. And it will be all at their hands, and unfortunately people will have to suffer just so these abortionists have their, these feminists have their way. Anyway, folks, we got more Silk or Joe Show coming up after this break, so stick with us.
What is going on?
Okay, we need to get out of here.
Okay.
Now.
Okay.
Move.
What?
Move.
Okay.
Move.
Stakes are high in the season finale of Patience, the hit British crime series that captivated viewers this summer on PBS. The thrilling season comes to a dramatic close this Sunday night, and all episodes are available on PBS Passport and PBS Masterpiece on Prime Video. Patience follows an autistic criminal records clerk named Patience Evans, who uses her unique analytical skills to solve murder cases. In the season finale, Patience and D.I. Monroe are held hostage by an escaped prisoner seeking justice, and time is running out. Patience joins PBS's extensive catalog of mysteries. From beloved classics to newer hits, there's a mystery around every corner, and mystery loves company. Don't miss the season finale of Patience this Sunday at 8 p.m. 7 Central on PBS. And stream the entire series on PBS Passport and PBS Masterpiece on Prime Video.
When 17-year-old Chris Meyer came home sick, his parents thought he was coming down with the flu. A day later, the high school senior died from meningococcal meningitis. His mother, Leslie, is sharing his story to help avoid similar tragedies.
I never knew there was an infection that could kill a healthy child in less than 24 hours, but meningococcal meningitis can do that. Meningitis spreads through respiratory droplets, so being around other kids, sharing water bottles, and kissing can transmit the disease. I didn't know that a vaccine may have helped to prevent my family's tragedy. In honor of my son Chris, I'm raising awareness about meningococcal vaccination so other families don't go through what we did.
The American Academy of Pediatrics recommends two doses of the MenACWY vaccine, the first at age 11 or 12, and a booster at age 16 when teens are at highest risk for meningococcal disease, which can be unpredictable and potentially devastating. This back-to-school season, discuss the importance of vaccination with your child's healthcare team. This message is sponsored by Sanofi.
My name is Judy Teeter, and I'm the mother of three boys. My youngest, Joe, was a great kid. He loves sports, music, and his youth group. One day, Joe asked me to drive him to an after-school event, which was about a mile from our home. I was driving through a green light when a car in cross traffic ran a red light and drove right into the side of our car, killing Joe. The driver was talking on her phone, so she never even saw the red light. She was so absorbed in her phone call. Before the crash, I didn't realize just talking on a cell phone while driving was so dangerous. Now it's something I think about every day. According to the National Safety Council, about 1 in 4 car crashes involves a cell phone. Hands-free is no safer. When you're behind the wheel, put away your phone, for Joe and for the thousands of needless deaths every year. Remember, there is no safe way to talk on a cell phone while driving. Find out more at nsc.org/callskill.
Take a look under your bed. Find stuff under there? What about jobs? No? Now try your basement. There's a pair of overalls that overall you're not so into anymore. A perfectly good laptop that hasn't sat in your lap in months. And even more stuff, but still no jobs? Well, you really have both. See, stuff is defined as household articles considered as a group. Sometimes this stuff is no longer needed. Wait, no longer needed? That can't be right. Because remember those jobs you were looking for? Those are really needed, and they're the stuff inside your stuff. Even inside that winter coat that moved with you to Phoenix. Our job is to unlock those jobs, and it starts when you donate your stuff to your local Goodwill. Here's how we do it. When you donate to Goodwill, we sell your stuff to provide job training for people right here in your community. So just by teaming up with Goodwill, you help create jobs. And isn't that worth parting with the leftover guitar from your 80s cover band? Goodwill. Donate stuff, create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America. Our vets need you.
I'm a quadriplegic. I'm definitely at risk with my diminished lung capacity.
I have MS. I'm in a wheelchair, and I can't leave the house because I have a compromised immune system.
I'm very concerned about, would there be a bed for me? Would there be a ventilator for me? Would I be able to survive something?
It's just heavy. You know, it's a heavy moment.
This is a war. This really is.
Our veterans fought for us. Let's fight for them.
I am so grateful for the PVA. They're making sure that we have all of the food and supplies that we need right now.
We all gotta help each other right now. We can't get through this by ourselves.
It's with profound gratitude that you're gonna be saving our lives. To find out how you can help, please go to helppva.org. That's helppva.org.
Welcome back to the Silk Road Joe Show, everybody. Co-host Joe with y'all today, and we are joined for this last segment by Aisha Kreutz. She is a chaplain and spokesman for Compass Care, as well as ambassador with the National Center for Public Policy Research's Project 21, executive director of Am I Not a Child, and a founding member of the Frederick Douglass Foundation, Coalition to Protect Kids New York, Frederick Douglass Freedom Alliance, and Douglass Leadership Institute. Aisha Kreutz, appreciate you joining us. How are you today?
I'm excellent. Thank you so much for having me.
Yep, glad to have you. So what's your view on this law in Massachusetts that just got passed, this abortion up until birth law, making them the 10th state to have such a law? I mean, how do you see it?
Well, I mean, the law itself, you know, demonic. And I think that hopefully people are really starting to see, you know, how pervasive this whole idea, right? Well, first it was rare, safe, and legal, you know, and now we're up to a point where we can kill babies in 10 states legally up until the time of birth. And so, I mean, that part is absolutely abhorrent. And hopefully people are really starting to open their eyes and see that.
Yes, we've even seen some Democrats in the state of Massachusetts come out against it, the state legislature. So that's certainly heartening for this cause. But, you know, even as far back as, recent as 2022, right after the Roe v. Wade decision, there was this poll done that showed most Americans did not support abortion like this. So who even is this law for?
Well, the activists, you know, there are those people, right? There's and I think the Massachusetts instance is really starting to show that, right? You have people that, you know, hey, you're supposed to have compliance. You're supposed to just stay quiet, do what we say. And they're saying no, right? And the activists that are out there are really, you know, these are eugenicists. That's what they are, right? I mean, you look at the Bill Gates of the world and all these people who are talking about how population needs to come down and, you know, we don't want to overpopulate the earth, all these other, you know, things that are out there. But the real people, right, they're saying we don't want this, and our elected officials are now being tone deaf, and it's time for people to stand up and really say, listen, you're not representing what we say. We have to no longer be silent anymore and start holding them accountable. And hopefully this is the beginning of that. You know, we should not be, I don't think we should overlook the importance of these nine legislators standing up against their own party. It can be a real turning point for us all.
And it's certainly an act of bravery on their part, because we've seen this past year just how vicious Democrats can be against those who turn against them. I mean, in the state of Virginia, where I'm at, you know, a Virginia state Supreme Court justice did not rule the way the party wanted to. So the party was talking about, how do we fire everybody on the state Supreme Court?
Absolutely. You know, I mean, they're vicious, you know, like, you know, they always talk about, you know, on the other side of the spectrum. Again, I don't want to make this partisan, because really the life issue should never have ever been allowed to become a partisan issue. But, you know, you are exactly right that they become absolutely vicious if you do not just follow lockstep, and they will eat their own. Versus, you know, you do see this bigger tent, I think, on the other side. And sometimes people say that gets us in trouble because, you know, you have so many varying, ideologies and principles right within the conservative Republican Party, you know, I think that's a good thing personally, but it also can get you in trouble at the ballot box, you know, because people start feeling some type of way about their person isn't exactly who they want. But at least we don't cannibalize our own, right? I mean, like, and that's the difference. I mean, you are absolutely right. They are vicious. If you stick your head out on these issues, they will just cut it off.
And that makes it even more brave of it when these 9 state legislatures come out and take a stand for the lives of the unborn, and especially, you know, that far in development where it's indisputable that the child could survive outside the womb. So what even is the point of an abortion at that level?
Exactly. And it's not, it shouldn't even, right? You can have the child, right? I mean, you can actually give birth, and many women do. You know, when people are talking about, oh, the risk of the, you know, whether it's a C-section, whether it's, you know, there is no need for an abortion for any life-saving medical reason except for to be barbaric and to allow ourselves to continue down this road of delegitimizing the preborn child, right, and who they are, and trying to continue to separate us. And we have just, you know, Frederick Douglass, he had said, you know, I'll partner with anyone to do good and no one to do, you know, evil. And, you know, this should be that one of those moments, right? I mean, he didn't care if you were a Quaker, if you were a Whig, if you, you know, whatever it is, as long as you were trying to do good. And so when we see people coming and stepping up and being like, listen, you may not, I might have nothing else, you know, in common with you, but if we can get the life issue right, we're going to start getting a lot of things right, you know, in this country, from taking violence down to, you know, the economic stresses that we're having. You know, it's linked to so many other issues, even outside of just basic human decency, right? I mean, like, if we want to take it that far and say that life is the defining issue of who we are as human beings. And I think that that's something that we should really start looking at as, you know, as our society yet again. And this is a very good step for us being able to do that. You know, Compass Care, obviously, is continuously going out there, you know, and Jim Harden, you know, and that team into anywhere and every place that's willing to listen to be able to help provide safe care to women, instead of saying, hey, you just go ahead and, you know, if at the last moment you decide you really can't do this, you can go ahead and kill your baby. No, there's other options that are out there that are far more suitable to a civilized society.
Right, and Compass Care does a lot of great work in that. But unfortunately, actually, I had on the Alan Nathan show on this past Wednesday, I talked with journalist Scott Wheeler about this, and I've had Reverend Hardin on the shows before talking about this going all the way back to 2022. There's just so much resistance against this idea of not having an abortion. I mean, Compass Care got itself firebombed because they were opposing abortion.
You know, and I'll tell you, I think a lot of that, I'm post-abortive myself, by the way, And I remember there was a time when I was very angry, didn't understand why. But you have to think about it. We have a country where almost every human being now has been touched by abortion. And you become very angry because you're fighting against the subconscious. And a lot of these people, I bet you, are post-abortive, and they're trying to justify their own actions.
Well, Aisha Kreutz, appreciate you being on the show. That music unfortunately means that we are out of time. But again, appreciate you being on the show. She is a chaplain and spokesman for Compass Care. Listeners, if you want to check them out, Compass Care, just one word, type it into Google and you'll find something. But also, don't forget to check us out. MainStreetRadioNetwork.com is our website. Thank you for tuning in to this hour of the Silk or Joe Show. Be seeing you.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-978-0600 or at our website, MainStreetRadioNetwork.com.